Mr. Schroeder, good morning to you.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Can I please report, my name is Kevin Schroeder. I'm here today representing the defendants at Phillips, excuse me, Settler. In April of 2001, Judge Eisenhower resolved the marriage of Madeline Settler and Stephen Settler and entered a decree in April of 2001. As part of that decree, awarded a percentage of an IRA at the Pine Valley State Bank and a little 18%+ of that IRA at the balance to Mr. Settler. Mr. Settler had previously been an employee of the Classical Power District, and when he left as an employee there, at some point in time after that, he had converted his 401k to an IRA account at the Pine Valley State Bank. A little over 4 years after the decree of April of 2001, Ms. Settler's attorney submitted to the courts on October 7th of 2005 a qualified domestic relations order, and in that order indicated that she was to receive 18%+ of the IRA account by the State Bank. Unfortunately, that submission was not consistent with the modification that Judge Eisenhower had made, reducing the separate percentage from 18+ to 17+%. Interestingly enough, in October of 2005, instead of submitting a qualified domestic relations order to the court for the court's signature, had the decree of dissolution been taken down to the Pine Valley State Bank and submitted to the bank, Ms. Sigler would have received all the funds that she was entitled
to. But you're not arguing that. You're not arguing that Mrs. Sigler failed to exercise her rights or opportunities that therefore caused her to lose this interest in property, are you?
No, I'm not. I don't want to be flippant here, but unfortunately there is no case law, either in this state or any other states of the United States of America, that suggests that procrastination is an affirmative defense.
Are there cases that treat property settlement agreements in a domestic relations case as something other than a debt that could be subject to the contempt powers of the court?
Well, the order of the court awarding her a percentage, Judge Eisenhower in a subsequent order, indicated that the reason he entered, that he awarded her a percentage of the account was due to the volatility of the stock market, because the court did not know what funds the Platte Valley held, whether it was mutual funds or simple stock purchases. But when Ms. Sigler discovered that unfortunately Mr. Sigler had taken $6,500 more than he was entitled to, the court entered an order reducing the 17.46% to $37,000 plus. At that point, it became a judgment. A judgment is a debt. And as I pointed out in my brief, there was a Maryland case relatively on point. But even more importantly, after I submitted my brief, I was able to do additional research. I found a case in Ohio that is strikingly similar to the case here. In that case, the trial court concluded that in principle Sizemore...
Could you give us a cite first, counsel?
Pardon?
Can you give us the cite to that case?
Your Honor, I submitted a list of additional sites to the clerk of the court this morning.
There's John.
And that site is in that list. 210 Ohio, 1525. Anyway, the trial court concluded that imprisoning Sizemore for his failure to pay a lump sum judgment was unconstitutional imprisonment for a debt under Article 1, Section 15 of the Ohio Constitution, which states, no person shall be imprisoned for the debt in any civil action on mesnate or final process. And the only additional words in the Ohio Supreme Court is unless in cases of fraud. What's interesting about the Ohio case is, pardon?
There was this
quick noise.
What's interesting about the Ohio case is they go back and cite a case called Robinson v. Robinson. What's interesting in Robinson is that there was an order in Robinson for the non-custodial parent to pay child support. And ultimately, the non-custodial parent's failure to pay child support, the amount that was past due was reduced to a judgment.
Excuse me, now you're taking us on a trip through the Sizemore jurisprudence, is that right?
Sizemore cites the Robinson case.
Okay, and has this piece of paper or this additional brief been served on Ms. Fangmeier?
Pardon?
Has this additional citation been served on Ms. Fangmeier?
Yes.
Today?
No, I served it today.
Thank you.
Counsel, isn't the difference between going to jail on a debt, which we all know you cannot do...
The difference between what and debt?
Going to jail on just a regular debt and going to jail on a contempt is that in contempt you have to be found willful in your conduct to violate a court order. That's a big difference than a preponderance of the evidence in a civil debt, isn't it?
I think an order to pay child support is totally punishable by civil contempt with the threat of incarceration.
No, I'm talking about the judgment issue that you're talking about. Even on a judgment issue, in a contempt, you can't go to jail until you're found to be in willful contempt of a court order. That's a big difference between that and the preponderance of the evidence just to get a judgment, isn't it?
Well, I think when the judge reduces the amount to $37,000+, it's a judgment.
It's a judgment, I agree, but right. He didn't go to jail because of the judgment. He went to jail because he was found in willful contempt of a court order, wasn't he?
Well, you can't order somebody to pay a debt when the normal remedies for a collection of judgment is either execution or garnishment. Those are the normal remedies. There is no known remedy that I'm aware of in the state of Nebraska that permits a court to imprison somebody for the failure to pay a debt. That's absolutely, totally contrary to the Nebraska Constitution. I don't know what else to say to you. To me, the language is just as plain as it could possibly be.
Debts are ordinarily incurred by contract. In other words, there's a mutuality, a consent, if you will, that the debtor has agreed to incur a debt because he or she has received some consideration, correct?
Well, there are certainly a number of provisions and other constitutions in other states that talk about the imprisonment for contractual debt. No person shall be imprisoned for debt arising out of or founded on a contract, express or implied. I think that's what you're talking about. But there is no contract in the dissolution action.
I think it's
simply a division of property.
I think the question here becomes, is this a debt or is this an order of the court that was willfully violated?
It's a debt.
I know that's your position.
What else is it if it isn't a debt? I mean, the only other conclusion...
I guess it could be an obligation that the court ordered your client to pay.
It only became a debt because there was a past failure to pay it. In other words, it wasn't a debt when it was initially ordered by the court. It wasn't a debt if it was paid in a timely fashion. It only became a debt under your argument because there was a delinquency that was determined to have a specific amount.
The only reason that it became a debt is that the plaintiff, Ms. Sickler, did absolutely nothing to try and segregate her 17%.
That's a defense of latches. It's not really an issue here, is it? The question is whether or not the court had authority to order your client to pay this amount or go to jail for 90 days. Whether she collected it earlier or not, the court had ordered this payment and then found that your client was in willful noncompliance of the court's order.
Well, I don't think it's, in this particular case, I don't think it's Mr. Sickler's obligation.
Well,
take the decree down to the Platte Valley State Bank.
I understand, but your defense is you can't put me in prison because this is a debt, and the Constitution prohibits that.
Right.
You're not arguing some other reason that she, if she'd have collected it 10 years earlier, we wouldn't be here.
No, it's highly unfortunate that she didn't.
Yeah, but that's not, but that's not material to.
No.
Okay.
There was one other Wisconsin case that, or in the additional citations there, where a husband agreed to pay a wife's attorney's fees of $2,000. He didn't do that, and so he was held in contempt. And the Wisconsin court found that when he agreed to pay the debt, it created a duty, but only a duty to pay a debt, not a judgment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Fangmeyer, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Marcia Fangmeyer, and I represent the appellee, Madeline Sickler, now known as Madeline Schmitz, in this matter. I would like to start by saying that I find it interesting that Mr. Schroeder is now telling me that this is a judgment, when I feel quite certain that if I go to back to the court on Monday and try to garnish Mr. Sickler's wages or put a lien on his house, they will argue that this is not a judgment. I don't know what, you are absolutely right, what this case is about is whether Mr. Sickler was properly held in contempt and whether the lower court properly imposed a sanction against him that included the possibility of a jail term. I don't know how much more willful you can get than Mr. Sickler. Mr. Sickler knew that his ex-wife was to receive a percentage of the funds that were in an IRA under his name at the bank. He didn't go down and transfer, and in fact, he started transferring money out of that IRA before the decree was even entered in this case.
Let me interrupt you here a minute. Wasn't the reason that the court entered a fixed sum would be to advise Mr. Sickler as to how much money he needed to pay in order to purge himself of the contempt?
Yes.
And that if he paid that sum, he could purge himself of contempt?
Correct.
The next question I have is, was there any evidence whether or not Mr. Sickler had the ability to pay that amount at the time the court ordered him to pay? In other words, if he didn't have any assets, you can't, it wouldn't seem to be fair to put him in jail if he didn't have the ability to pay it.
At the time of Judge Young's order, that the issue of whether he could afford to pay was an issue during the course of the evidentiary hearing. And you will note there was no evidence that he could not pay. And then furthermore, Mr. Schroeder in his brief admits that it isn't about whether or not he could pay. If you read his brief, there is an admission that this is about whether he could
and
pay.
And in fact, it's his burden to prove he can't have, he
correct,
doesn't
he
have
did
that
not
ability.
Prove that.
It's not your burden to prove
no,
that.
No, it is not. But, and I...
Go ahead, go ahead.
I took us back to the decree, but really, we get to that point of the contempt. When Judge Geisnagel did say you have to pay $37,000, which, by the way, the account was already empty by that. Mr. Sickler knew that it was that she hadn't received her money yet.
So,
but
what,
then, I'm sorry.
Excuse me. What about counsel's argument that it's unconstitutional to impose a jail sentence for a debt?
He's correct that we don't throw people into debtor's prison and let them linger there because they didn't pay a debt. But what we have here is a person who just disobeyed and disobeyed and disobeyed orders. Even after he agreed to a payment plan with Ms. Sickler, which was put into an order, he simply paid nothing. So he, and he has, as the case law is still pretty clear, he has the keys to the jail cell.
I want to ask you about that. The order, to me, seems to give him the keys to the jail cell up until the moment he enters the cell. At that point, he no longer has the power to purge under the order as it's framed. Do you agree? In other words, it says, got to pay it by such and such a date at such and such a time. If you don't, you go to jail. Doesn't say anything about paying it while he's in jail.
That is not the way I understood it, Your Honor.
But isn't that the way it reads?
I would have to go back and I'll be honest, I will have to go back and reread that.
Well, assume it reads the way I think it reads.
He did say, you are correct that he said 90 days in jail, not an ongoing lingering jail term.
You would agree, would you not, that in a civil contempt punishment, even when the jail sentence is being carried out, the person in contempt must hold the keys to the cell, must be able to purge by payment even during that period of time?
That is certainly my understanding, and I would agree with that. Because that's the whole purpose, is to get the person to obey the court order. And I think in this case, the judge, the lower court, found itself in a position where it felt like it had no other way to get Mr. Sickler to obey the court order. If he didn't pay after he'd already been told to pay, he didn't pay when he entered into a payment plan with Ms. Sickler, I think the court, just as I think the lower court said at one point, you haven't paid a dime toward this judgment. You haven't done, or not judgment, toward this amount of money that you owe the appellee. And I think the judge said, I don't have any other choice. It's the only way to get you to obey a court order.
Is that read into the order by operation of law, or should it have been explicit that the contemnor had the keys to the jail?
I have to be honest, and again, to answer Ms. Judge Castle's question, and perhaps maybe because in these cases that people are told you have to go to jail because you didn't pay child support, there's always that key to the court, to the jail cell, by saying, if you pay, you get it out. I guess if you get out. I have to be honest and say that was an assumption that I made.
Is everybody making that assumption that by operational law that's the solution, even though the order wasn't explicit?
I have to be honest and say that I had not even thought through that aspect.
Can we remand this order back to the court with directions to make it specific that Mr. Sickler does have the keys to his jail cell by modifying the order of the court, giving him the opportunity to get out of jail by paying the amount? Can we do that?
You can do that.
Does anybody have any real doubt that if he paid the money, that the judge wouldn't let him out of jail?
I don't.
But my point is, you don't have to relitigate any of the other issues. The question is, really, Mr. Sickler claims this is a debt. You can't put me in prison for owing a debt. And your argument is, this is a violation of the court's orders, willfully done by Mr. Sickler, which gives the court the power to impose incarceration for failure to comply with the court's orders.
It's as simple as that.
Your framework is that this is an order, or to go back up to your initial comment, you wouldn't be registering a judgment and trying to collect here. You're characterizing this as an order.
That is correct. But I will again say that I'm quite certain that if I were to try to execute on this Monday morning, I would be arguing that it's not a judgment. Certainly try it. It's really quite simple, and unless you have any other questions, I will submit my case on my brief. I will note that I had not seen Mr. Schroeder's cases until this morning.
If you want to file additional authorities yourself, you may do that.
All right. Do I have a time frame?
Time frames
are always good for me.
You have 1 week to do that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is Linder versus Kindig. Mr. Engdahl, good morning to you.